lay my body in the ground. Cold clay against my skin, but I don't care at all. Can't seem to find my peace of mind. So with the earth I lay entwined, 6 feet underground, my feet are worn and dry. When I get to the other side, I'll put your picture away. Coming back to you, it's just too far. If I was cast out on the sea, would you come and look for me? Would you just let me see?
Down. Alison Krauss, Barry Bales, Ron Block, Jerry Douglas, Dan Tominski, the whole of Union Station gathered round me in our studio here at Maida Vale. It's so good to see you all. Congratulations on a very, very beautiful album, and double congratulations on the incredible success of this album too, because this album is breaking through here in Britain in a big way, Alison, as well, isn't it?
We're thrilled. We're so excited. Yeah, we're very happy.
It's so good to see you, particularly having, you know, you and I met up just recently. And I get the feeling that from the point that you and I met from then on, this album has taken you into a whirl.
Yeah, you know, it really makes things worthwhile for all of us, you know, who spent so much time and care making this record. And all of us worked very hard on it. And so it's been such a pleasure to have people respond to it the way they have. You know, you get finished with something and you get satisfied and kind of throw it out there, and it's a wonderful thing to have people respond to it the way they have after all we put into it.
So yeah,
we're very happy.
Because Dan, I mean, this is, You'd all been off doing other projects, hadn't you, for a while prior to sort of reconvening to begin the work for this album. So sort of pulling the threads of everything back in together and becoming Union Station again and beginning to work on this album, what was the process that you went through to pull those threads together?
Well, I think, you know, everyone had other things that we did, you know, while Allison toured with Robert, but I don't know that we ever stopped being Union Station. I mean, it's been a little while since we recorded, probably close to seven years, but, you know, it felt like the family was back together, you know, in the studio, so it was just a great experience. I personally had a better time on this record than I had on some of the others, and I'm just happy to be back with everyone and playing.
Yeah. Ron and Barry, I mean, you're the sort of nucleus of almost the original band, aren't you? I mean, Jerry, you worked with Allison in the early days as producer, but came into the band a little later. But Barry, you in particular, you know, you've been a rock at the center of all this pretty much right through, haven't you?
Dragging them down to the bottom, yeah.
In terms of the sort of hiatus, just the time when you weren't working with Union Station, I'm very, very interested in your interest in conservationism and the farm and everything else. Just describe to us the kind of environment of your life in that respect.
Well, I live out in the country. I don't live in Nashville. I live over in the eastern part of the state of Tennessee towards Appalachian Mountains. And I live on the family farm over there. And I like to be outside and hunt and fish and just, I call it diesel therapy. I get on the tractor and ride around and do things and just a lot of habitat restoration and I don't actually farm per se for profit. So it's just an outlet and a release for me to have something to do and sort of help make it better than it was when I got it.
Yeah. And Jerry, I mean, you and I saw one another recently, didn't we, at Celtic Connections?
That's right.
And, you know, one of the aspects that brings you across to the UK, because you're a frequent flyer, right, to Britain, you know, the transatlantic sessions are part of that, aren't they? Just describe to people who don't know about the transatlantic sessions what it actually is and how it all came about.
Ali Bain, the fiddler from Shetland, really had the brainchild for transatlantic sessions. And he wanted to bring together musicians from both sides of the Atlantic. And we've created a band that is half and half. It's James McIntosh is the drummer, Donald Shaw, who actually runs Celtic Connections and oversees that whole festival, is the piano player, accordion player for the band. Danny Thompson plays bass. And then there's Russ Barenberg and sometimes Daryl Scott, Tim O'Brien, myself, and Dirk Powell playing banjo, all kinds of instruments. Phil Cunningham playing the accordion. Michael McGoldrick, who's an amazing piper and plays all the whistles and everything. That's the band, you know, for Celtic Connections. And then we bring a Allison and Dan have both been over for the TV portion. This time we had Amos Lee. We've had so many people from the States and people from, we've had James Taylor. We've had people from over here.
Roseanne Cash,
and, you know, and Karen Matheson, Julie Fowlis.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people from over here. And we try to mix it up, and it's just, you know, to make people understand that this music is it's just music to us. But, you know, we have different names for different fiddle tunes on each side, but there's the same song.
Yeah. Well, the thread across the Atlantic, you know, isn't it? It's the connections are so strong.
Yeah, it was the movement from early on of the Scottish people and the Irish people and the English people moving over and bringing their fiddle tunes and all that kind of stuff over. And the Americans ripped it off and gave them different names.
Ron, we'll talk a little in a moment too, and we're going to hear some more music from the band as well. But what are you going to play for us next?
We're going to do one of Dan's songs, aren't we? The Dust Bowl. There's another part of American culture here coming up, of a period in our history when the land dried up and blew away and blew all the people from the Midwest to California.
You want to try it?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
Let's do
it.
Yeah.
Thank you. were prime. Everything we owned got all burned up in the Great Depression fire. Strip mines, one crop farming, drained the green earth dry. We lost it all, only love was left, and that was one thing money can't buy. We roamed, dust bowl children, singing a dust bowl song. When the green fields are gone, when the green grass growing fields are gone, when the green fields are gone, when the green grass growing fields are gone. They said in California there was work of every kind. Well, the only job I ever got out there was waiting on a welfare line. Once I had a dollar, and once I had a dream, but now all the work is being done by a big old machine. We roll.
Dust Bowl Children. Dan Tominski on lead vocal, Ron Block on banjo. I'm so interested, you know, Ron, in the relationship that Union Station has with traditional bluegrass, because this is pretty traditional sounding album, isn't it? I mean, it's great that it's creating the success that it's having, because to me it's a really important bridge across into real bluegrass.
It is. We all have similar influences. And we have influences that are radically different, but the core of what we grew up playing is basically what you would call traditional bluegrass. And it's just something that fuels, when we play a song like this, it fuels, I guess, the memory or the feeling that we have from bluegrass really fuels that.
Is bluegrass in any way inhibiting, in the sense that it's very, very structured, isn't it? And, you know, they're quite demanding in that respect. What's your relationship with that demand?
Yeah, I don't think that we operate according to that necessarily, but we do have, I believe, a sensibility that is informed by traditional bluegrass, where you play the melody, where you don't play things that are inappropriate. You know, we're pretty, I don't want to say careful, but we're aware. You know, when Dan's singing, I don't want to play stuff that detracts from what he's doing. Mm. I want people to listen to the vocal.
Yes.
So I'm supporting that. And when Jerry plays, he's supporting what's going on. When Allison plays, when everybody in this band plays behind a vocal, we're paying attention to the vocal and making sure that reigns supreme.
Right? Does that come a lot from, say, a band all performing around one microphone, which is one of the, you know, when I first went to the Station Inn in Nashville in 99, I was there on the night, and this is my first ever night in Nashville, to see Steve-O with the Dharma Corey band. And Ray Kennedy had just put one main microphone in the middle of the room. And, yeah. And of course, it's choreographed. They all played around it so that when the vocalist is finished, he leans back, the fiddle player comes in, and that becomes the lead instrument, then he steps back. So is that part of what informs?
I would think so.
Yeah.
That makes total sense because, you know, if you're standing next to somebody and you're having to get out of the way when they're singing, you have to be aware constantly what's going on. And you can't just be lost in your own little world playing your stuff.
Yeah. You don't want to break the spell.
Yeah.
By something that would interrupt.
I think so many of us grew up, I mean, I grew up listening to Flatt & Scruggs, and Flatt & Scruggs were the kings of choreographed bluegrass music. I mean, you knew who was going to play the next solo because of who was backing up the vocalist at that point. And they, you know, ran into each other, kind of, the whole band was moving all the time. You weren't nailed to the floor. You know, there was some real movement going on within the band, and Lester and Earl were on one side of the microphone. Lester would be singing, Josh Graves or Paul Warren would be playing backup to them in a position on that one microphone that you knew who was going to take the next solo after you figured out what their choreography was.
It's a fantastic thing to watch. It's made in itself.
That's what Steve Earle and the Dukes were doing. They were trying to recreate that.
Yeah. So we should really play something also now from the CD itself. So what would you like me to play? See, now I'm going to watch the way that the Union Station democracy works.
This was tricky.
Yes, sir. You play your favorite.
Very tricky. You can play your favorite.
Well, shall we play the Jackson Brown song? Because that's so beautiful, and it concludes the album. So would anybody like to introduce my opening farewell and just talk us into the song?
This is a tune I learned. There's a guy, Michael Johnson, who sang Bluer Than Blue, you remember, back in, I think it was 74. And he is the uncle of Gary Pachosa, who has recorded our records for 20 years. And I heard him sing one night at the Bluebird Cafe and kind of changed my life. Like, he was one of those moments where I thought, what's going on here? He was a singer singing all of these things that I thought he'd written. So when I found out that he actually hadn't written them, I realized who I thought he might have been might not be who he is. And it was kind of this really big deal for me. And so whenever we start recording, I usually get out all of my Michael Johnson records. It gets me in the mood. And opening Farewell is such a beautiful song. The story is very easy to see and to get lost in. And then I brought it around, and I had forgotten that I had brought it and played it for the guys one time before. But I brought it around this time, and it stuck. And changed the words around a little bit to keep the things feminine, and you know, things masculine, because it was from a woman singing it. And I was glad that Jackson said it was okay to do it. He probably was going, what? But he was nice enough to let us change it. There was, you know, I wanted the woman to cry instead of the man to cry.
Yeah.
Kept it all kind of feminine and masculine, and I think it turned out effective.
It's been a special treat for me to be in the middle of this beautiful music making. Thank you to all of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Rob.